This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Take a vacation from your bills, pay off credit cards, and save thousands of dollars after a simple phone call to Golden Oak Lending. Visit GoldenOakLending.com to speak to someone today.
Golden Oak Lending, cured my blues.
NMLS 114937.
If you love your phone, but not your carrier, just switch to T-Mobile. You can keep your phone, keep your number, and we'll help pay it off up to $800 per line. You can also use our savings calculator to compare our plans and streaming benefits against Verizon and AT&T. So, switch and keep your phone, keep your number, and keep more of your moolah at T-Mobile.com.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, port-in, 90-plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
He is Aura, Amir Khan. Your McNeese Cowboys just pulled it off. They beat Clemson. What were you thinking? What were you thinking as that clock went to zero?
We got our first win in school history, you know. So McNeese is the hometown school, and, you know, for us to get a win in March Madness, you know, it means the world to me.
What was the boombox blast in pregame?
Yeah, no switch by NBA Youngboy.
Will that be back Saturday, or there'll be a total switch up again?
You know, we really don't know. You know, everything we do is just...
We got the boombox out now.
Yeah, it is. It's right there, you know.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. That is John Fanta interviewing the aforementioned manager of McNeese State, Amir Khan, known as Aura. He's the guy that carries the boombox in front of the team.
Big job.
He's also the first manager in college sports with an NIL deal. He has he has endorsement deals with Buffalo Wild Wings, Tick Pick, and Insomnia Cookies.
Gotta love it. Gotta love it. He's got all of the deals. He's got all of the swag. And he's got all the attention yesterday. Went viral after McNeese State pulls off the upset of the day. And March is made for these kind of moments that happened yesterday when Clemson didn't show up. McNeese State took advantage, and now they move on. Purdue's going to have their hands full.
The McNeese State cheerleaders were wearing socks with his face on them. Aura's face
so funny.
On their socks. I mean, the guy is the manager.
Well, he's managing his
doing
his business quite
work.
Well. So is Will Wade, who at 42 years old is one heck of a basketball coach. He is now 50-8 at McNeese, and he was obviously 105-51 at LSU, getting a lot of respect. He's got a new job. Charles Barkley. I always think it's interesting when Barkley and Kenny return to cover college basketball for a couple weeks. But Charles Barkley had this to say about Will Wade, the coach at McNeese State.
Because I hated it. I'm not going to lie. First of all, I think he's a hell of a coach. I'm a Will Wade fan. I think he's a hell of a coach. I want to make that perfectly clear. And this should not have gotten out. He could have said, hey, I'm here. We're getting ready to go to the tournament. We can announce it at the end of the tournament. Whenever we lose, which probably be today. Clemson's probably a better team. But I don't think it's fair to those kids going into the game knowing their coach is going to be gone. Like I say, I'm a Will Wade fan. I think he's a hell of a coach. But I think it's total BS that this got out. And if North Carolina State put pressure on him, like, you know what? I respect my players too much. If y'all can't wait 48 hours, get a job to somebody else, and I'll wait for another job.
I don't know all the...
I agree with Charles.
Sure.
I think it's easy to agree with Charles.
Yeah, I think everyone would.
I think we also, in agreeing with Charles and that sentiment, reveal probably our age and what generation we are of. Because I think that I wonder this. If I were a player in that situation, relating to your own college experience, yeah, I'd feel a little confused, betrayed, however you want to describe it. I would distracted. I wouldn't want that to come out. But I think today's college athlete is so much in it for themselves that they're going after their own and they NIL all, and deal. They're going after their own great situation.
And they're all transferring.
And they don't care because, you know
North
what?
Carolina
they're
State.
Like, go, coach. I'm right behind you.
Yeah.
And if you weren't leaving, I was. And I don't think they go in it with a four-year commitment to a program that's it's year to year and it's tenuous and it's temporary and it's all these things that I don't think we're used to. We're just slowly adapting to the new landscape of college sports. These players probably understand fully why Will Wade is moving on.
Will Aura get an NIL deal at North Carolina State?
Wouldn't surprise me. Would anything surprise you about college sports these days? I mean, if it helps
that
him,
that might surprise.
If it helps him,
if he brought the manager,
if it helps him pay for college and finance, you know, his career, great. Everybody's getting a piece. College sports money's out of control, and they're going to have to find a way to somehow regulate both the transfer portal and the NIL at some point in time. It's not happened yet, so everyone's in it for themselves to make as much as they can while they can, and that's why I think you see a McNeese State team that was unbothered by the coach going public with his plans to move on immediately after the season's over.
I can't let this Aura thing go, this Amir Khan thing. This is from one of the players. This is from the guard, DJ Richards Jr. The managers, they really don't get credit for all that they do, he told the AP. They follow us all year. They rebound for us. They get up early. Then they still have to go to class, and then they have to come back and rebound again. I love that Amir is getting this publicity. That's awesome.
The implication of that is that the players don't have to go to class.
Well, yeah, that's true. He has to rebound, go to class. They come back and rebound. They just shoot the whole time.
Those managers are often successful once they leave.
Oh, yeah.
Those jobs. Dusty May, the Michigan coach, mm-hmm. I believe he was a student manager at Indiana for the basketball program.
Did Hoosier cheerleaders wear his socks?
I don't
his
think.
His likeness on their socks?
I don't think that was probably the case. No, I don't remember that.
I don't remember ever hearing of a guy being that popular. But he carries the boombox.
Yeah, that'd be a good second-round matchup. It's fun. It's a fun story. Hopefully there'll be someone else emerging today as a surprise team with a nice story, because McNeese State, that's exactly one of those teams you expected to be talking about after the first day of the tournament.
No, it's absurd, and it's fun. It's good. I don't know who that team is, but I think that there are quite a few teams that we're going to get more information about. Unfortunately, I don't know that there were many big upsets over the course of the day. Like I said, I had Drake, so I don't feel like that was a big upset. Creighton, I don't think of that as an upset either. I think we both had Creighton and Drake. I'm just trying to think of who else, like a lower seed that won other than McNeese. There weren't a ton of them. There just weren't a ton of...
Arkansas over Kansas was a big one, 10-7. And when you knock out Bill Self, and that has been a tough year for the Jayhawks, but you have John Calipari going to Arkansas, which I think was a huge shocker when it happened.
Right.
And this is John Calipari delivering on that promise. Arkansas has a proud basketball history. You can go way back and see all kinds of examples.
Nolan Richardson. 40 Minutes of Hell.
All kinds of things in their past that build a tradition. But it had declined at times,
but they got a huge NIL deal, right? Isn't that what the deal is? Like, didn't he go there not just for the money, but also because they've invested a ton of money in that program?
Well, you're seeing what's happening there happening a lot of places. It's become all about that. It's not necessarily the facilities or the fan base or the administration. It's just about what is your NIL situation like?
Yeah,
and John Calipari went to a very healthy one in Arkansas and winning the first game against Kansas and beating Bill Self. It's great. It's a great moment for that program and for Cal and his career. Now he gets to go up against a guy who's done that a couple different times at a couple different places. Nemesis? Is that too? I don't know if it's nemesis, but certainly a rival in coaching in Rick Pitino.
Sure.
That's going to be fun.
But I think Pitino is probably held in higher esteem than Cal, and I think that Pitino is probably, you know, it's another situation where you got a lot of NIL money at, with the Johnnies, and that's how they got him, and they've invested in that program. And it was interesting to hear from him because it made you think about the Chicago Bears. He was talking about how when you come into a program, the first year is just about building culture, and the second year is when you can start winning. And I thought, are we in the culture building business now?
That's pretty much all sports. You know, yeah. I think you're right. That's all sports you look at it. But with Pitino specifically, when he gives you insight into how he approaches a new job and creating a culture that will win, you listen a little bit closer because this is his record sixth team that he's taken to the NCAA tournament.
It's incredible.
And it's six times he has arrived on campus, moved into an office, assessed the situation, and gotten to the NCAA tournament. That is impactful, and that is unprecedented, and that's why, you know, that's why he's one of the best coaches. Really, he doesn't have the championships a lot of other guys do when we talk about the best ever in the sport, but he can be in the conversation, in the team photo, if you will, just because of his ability to do that at six different places.
Yeah, it's pretty extraordinary. He's just had an amazing career. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Really, just an extraordinary career. And, you know, we know that he coached Billy Donovan back in the day. It's just crazy when you think about all the stops that he's made and everything that he has done in his career. It's just
those guys are ageless too.
No,
those guys look like they're ageless.
Yeah,
Pitino 6 years older than Cal, I believe, and both operate like they still have a lot left in the tank. So it's fun to see Pitino and Calipari and Tom Izzo and kind of the coaches and McDermott, guys who've been around a very long time, used to seeing every March have some success and kind of going head to head.
Pitino said that. If he had to name a rival, his greatest rival in coaching was Jim Calhoun. He said that dates back to the late 70s when he was coaching at Boston University, and Calhoun was the coach at, I think it was Northeastern. And they were like in the Boston area coaching against each other, and then that just, you know, as Calhoun moves to Connecticut and he goes to his various stops, that rivalry never ended. That was the guy that he considered his greatest rival as a coach.
That's going way back. That shows you how long he's been around. Head to head, Calipari and Pitino. Cal is 16-12, 13-9 in college. 3-3 in the NBA.
Oh, that's pretty wild.
Because these are guys who have both gone to the NBA and back. Yeah. And so they're 3-3 against each other in the NBA. And Cal is 13-9 with the advantage in college head-to-head against Rick Pitino.
312-644-6767. Jeff is listening on the Odyssey app. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. David, you're scaring me with your Sparty choice. I am a Sparty lover from the day I was born, but I'm worried about their strengths versus their weaknesses because I watch a lot of their games, and they have depth, and they have free throw shooting, and they have they play good defense and they rebound, but their weaknesses are they don't shoot well from the perimeter, which is usually a key in these tournament games, the one-and-dones. Their best players are all 6'3 and under. And they're prone to stretches without scoring. But I will say this, if they win the championship, and you are right, sir, I will send you my newest creation, peanut butter maple pecan pie bars, and I will start calling you David Mac Daddy Haw from now on. But go Big Ten, go Sparty. I love it.
Thanks, Jeff. I'll take the peanut maple bars. Save the nickname.
You didn't call... You didn't call Michigan State to win, did you?
Yeah.
Oh, you have Michigan State win the tournament?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I thought you had Duke.
No.
You have Michigan State over Duke.
Yep, Michigan State over Duke.
Oh, wow.
I got the Dukies, John Shire against Michigan State and Sparty.
Look at you.
And I think that Tom Izzo will end the drought. Hey, who knows?
Are you worried about Bryant?
I'm always worried about Chris Bryant. Bryant, the team, I'm not. Not so much. Okay. That should be one of these.
Where is Bryant from? Does anyone know off the top of their head? Where is Bryant? What conference are they in? This is the problem sometimes.
Well, you got another McNeese State situation. You knew, but most people knew where McNeese was from, right?
Yeah, Louisiana.
And you could tell that. They're from Lake Charles, Louisiana. Bryant, is it university or college? Is Bryant University?
Rhode Island.
Yeah, it's in Rhode Island.
Small state.
Smallest state.
Oh, okay.
No, it is in Smithfield, Rhode Island.
Smithfield?
Mm-hmm.
Jeez.
Yeah, I don't think they've got much of a shot.
Okay. Found in 1863.
What conference?
Not sure.
Yeah. I was in Vegas one time, and I was talking to Joe, and I needed a tip, and he gave me a game. And I bet some team, never heard of the school, didn't know the team name, didn't know the quarterback, the coach, didn't know the conference they were in, and won going away.
That's great. That's a great Joe Fortenbaugh example.
Yeah, it was wonderful. Not so much yesterday. Okay. Joe loved Louisville.
American East.
American East Conference.
Okay. Is that an automatic bid?
Must have been.
I'm sure they didn't get two.
So this is the fifth time, isn't this something? The Patino Calipari, fifth time they've met in the tournament.
Yeah, that's pretty wild.
Yeah, the first time
they had the rivalry right with Louisville and Kentucky.
But the first time was 1992 when Patino was at Kentucky and Calipari was at UMass.
Wow!
Remember the big man for Calipari, or what? Who, the UMass big man?
Yeah, Marcus Camby.
Yeah, Marcus Camby,
of course.
What is the course?
Don't.
That's good.
Don't come in with 90s and early 2000s college basketball. Right. I don't think I'm going to get it.
All right, that's good. That was that your sweet spot?
That was when I was working national radio, so I even knew like goalies and hockey.
Look at him.
Now you couldn't even tell me who's in goal for the Hawks.
Well, I was hoping they found their goalie of the future, but they've been like getting pummeled.
Yeah, it's more about defense than Spencer Knight. Okay. I still think Spencer Knight's a guy. We digress.
One of those nights.
Just one of
those crazy
old
he's
nights.
He's going to still have to be a special night,
I believe. Cue up the Eagles, Brandon. That's an Eagles reference.
Yeah, don't cue it up, Brandon.
But I think Michigan State's got a shot. Duke, I hope, has a long run for John Shire's sake. I wonder if – now, Dustin asked a question during the break that was interesting. If Cooper Flagg is available, does that mean he's going to play? I'm assuming he's going to play. I'm assuming they're going to try it. If you are – healthy enough to practice.
He's all gung ho. Like he's all in. And Shire was like, "Well, wait a minute.
You know when you assume."
So I they used the word available. They didn't say he was going to start.
They didn't.
They said he's available to play in the tournament. And you would assume that they are not looking to go out.
They're
going to
wheel him
afternoon.
Out for a jumper.
That was
the other problem, right? I mean, and also, you just used the wheel him out part.
Because he was in a...
They should have never put him in a wheelchair. That was ridiculous.
It's also policy, probably.
OSHA?
All hospital-ish places. Like, they have to leave in a wheelchair.
Yeah. Yeah, when you leave the hospital.
Yeah, you leave the hospital, you have to leave in a wheelchair. Have you never left a hospital?
Thankfully, I personally have not personally had to leave a hospital because I was in the hospital, no.
He's usually in the rubber room.
You have to.
Yeah, I was in my straitjacket.
It's pretty standard. It's a jarring image.
I mean, when after my wife had, gave birth to two children, she was in a wheelchair holding the child as we left the hospital. Yes,
that's what they do.
But I think Connor or Cooper Flagg will be in a position where if he's able to play, they'll work him in. I think shake off some of the rust against their first round opponent, Mount St. Mary's. And then get him ready because you don't want to take the second round for granted. Baylor and or Mississippi State will come at Duke in a way that will challenge them. And I don't think you want that to be Cooper Flagg's first exposure since the injury.
Where is Homer Drew from? Where was he born? Because I know he lived in Indiana, and I know you love the Drew boys.
Outside St. Louis, I believe.
Okay.
Webster Grove, St. Louis.
Okay. But I'm saying.
Why is that?
Well, because you love the home, you love the Drew kids.
That's a random question, though.
But because you
St. Louis, Missouri,
because isn't
1944?
Isn't Baylor
Scott what? Drew? Scott Drew.
So I mean, but you've referenced Grand Canyon with the former Bowl.
I'm looking at the bracket.
I know, but you love the Drews. That's all I'm saying.
Yes, I love the Drews. The pride of Valparaiso.
See, that's why.
Yes.
But I don't think they have long-standing Indiana roots is my point.
I think they most certainly do.
Oh, I really believe there's like a coaching carpetbagging going on.
They definitely do. No. Yeah. Homer Drew was born in St. Louis. He ended up going to Mishawaka, and he was a coach there. Then he went to Valparaiso and built a program there.
Yes, I'm
aware. He had two sons that were legends at Valparaiso. He's got Hoosier roots.
I mean, Bryce had one of the best moments in the history of this tournament.
Jamie Sykes, Carter pressuring. It's to Jenkins, the Drew for the win! Gone! Oh! He did it! Bryce Drew did it! Valpo has won the game! A miracle!
I believe they knocked off SEC Ole Miss in that game.
They did. See? They did. Mm-hmm. You know what the name of that play was? Huh? You know what the name of that play was, don't you, Dustin?
That I won't say I know
gotcha.
That play.
Pacer.
Pacer.
Gotcha.
Another Indiana reference.
Is that play?
Yes.
Yeah, you remember?
Yes.
Okay.
He wanted to play trivia with me late 90s basketball.
Don't
wow.
dare.
For 200,
back off,
Alex.
Sir.
Back off.
That play was called Pacer. I believe it was called Santa Slay.
That would have been like a double Jeopardy question.
Nope, it was Pacer, and it was a moment. 1998. And then they went to the next round, and I remember that very well. Fond memories. Homer was right in front of driving that bandwagon.
Homer is a great guy. I'm not suggesting otherwise. I'm just saying it's kind of circumstance that he ended up coaching at Valpo. Therefore, the boys were born in Indiana. But I don't consider them like schoolboy legends
okay.
of Indiana.
Circumstance. It's happenstance that I mentioned both of them because I think Scott Drew and Baylor have a chance to give Duke a problem
right.
in the second round
right.
because of their tournament history. And I do think that Grand Canyon should not be taken lightly by Maryland today. Only two references today. No, no Hoosier references.
No, but you've mentioned them both yesterday and today. I mean, we can
He's an Indiana
tape.
Boy.
You do like
them. You
won't
pull
guys.
The tape.
I know. I'm just saying you like them.
I do like them.
And I'm trying to point out that you probably like them because of reasons that aren't actually legit.
Okay.
Coaching carpet bagging.
So, we'll go to break after you call in and question my legitimacy. Thank you.
No, they're just the Drew brothers. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 Score.
Survivor 48 is here, and alongside it, we're bringing you a brand new season of On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. If you're a Survivor superfan, you won't want to miss this deep dive into every episode where we break down how we designed the game, the biggest moves, your burning questions. It's the only podcast that gives you inside access to Survivor that nobody else can. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
Work.
And another chapter.
And a steal, the 13th of the game. That puts a capper on it. Jackson will just dribble it out. And the Valley will run deep for at least one more game.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Look at that, Brandon, with a little Lamar underneath Drake. That's beautiful, buddy.
Big win. Big win for Drake, beating Mizzou. 11 over 5, 67-57.
Biggest upset?
No.
Or was it McNeese?
No, it was clearly McNeese. I think McNeese is obviously the big story of day one. Drake had a very, very strong performance, but I think a lot of people expected them to play well just based on their tournament play in the conference tournament last week.
Well, and also they're, what are they now, 31-3 on the year. That guy comes in, McComb, the coach, comes in, brings four starters from a Division II championship team, and those guys, you can tell that they are very well disciplined. They played together for a very long time, and man, they played great defense. They turned the ball over in that game, David, which I couldn't believe, frankly, because they're pretty good at protecting the ball. But maybe it was the athleticism at the different level that was really
well coached, and they have some real good shooters, and they play intelligent basketball, high basketball IQ collectively. And they're one of those teams that, unfortunately, is becoming rarer to find in the NCAA tournament field. And it's this underscores, I think, when you see how difficult it has become to project. And it's not, has nothing to do with everyone's brackets maybe being having a lot of red on it today or what. It's just harder to predict things in the tournament because of the way college basketball has changed. Kansas was the preseason number one team in America. They suffered a first-round exit yesterday. Michigan State, we're talking about them. I picked Michigan State to win it all. Some people have them as a trendy Final Four pick. They were unranked in the preseason. So let's say, hypothetically, Michigan State goes on and wins the title. Unranked Michigan State. Kansas, number one in the preseason, ousted in the first round. Bill Self did not have the kind of season they expected in Lawrence. And it's just the way talent and players move around, you no longer have these programs that are able to be built over time, over years. It's over months. You've got to react quickly. You've got to gel fast, and you've got to hope that everything comes together at the right time.
Yeah, you know, they it was incredible. Bennett Sturts is the guard from Drake. That kid played a phenomenal game. He really did a good job, and I thought it was interesting because Barkley at halftime was saying, you know, I would double that guy up and make someone else beat me. I just wouldn't let that player beat me. And I think that there's sometimes when you're watching some of these tournament games, and Kenny compared him, and I got to be careful about misquoting him, but he compared him to Steph Curry, not with his shooting. He's not Steph Curry, but with his movement off the ball.
Yeah.
Like the minute he gave up the ball, the way that he moved.
That's the basketball IQ.
That is exactly that.
That's exactly where he finds the holes in the defense. He has a good sense of where to be and how to space the floor.
Yep.
And he had a one-legged three-point shot that was just one of those things that Steph Curry would do. So I get the comparison, even though there's only one Steph Curry. But Sturts is one of those guys that you look at.
Smart player.
As many teams as play the 3-and-D and all those things,
yep.
He's an NBA guy.
Well, I don't know that he's an NBA guy. He's a future head coach. He literally said almost verbatim what the coach had to say when they interviewed the coach in game, and then they interviewed this guy at halftime. So the two of them weren't sitting together. They didn't know.
Yeah.
But he knows exactly how the coach sees the game, and he sees the game the same way.
Yeah, and that helps.
Incredibly valuable.
When you have a coach on the court like
right,
that.
Right.
I just wouldn't be shocked if he ends up in the NBA just because of the way that he
just his
everything we
IQ.
Just said. His IQ,
yeah.
Knowing how to space, knowing where to shoot, and then he can bury it. So he could be a valuable asset. Dalton Connect?
Well, he can't shoot like Dalton.
No, Connect. not quite that good of a shooter.
But I mean, he's just one of these guys that can run a team and that knows how the game is played. And like I said, he's like their floor general and kind of it's the coach's brain on the floor.
Somebody takes a shot at him in the second round. You know, he'll hang around for a little while. You never know.
Yeah, I mean. It's extraordinary. I guess he had zero Division I scholarship offers, and that's why he wound up going to Division II. And then the coach gets to Division I, and he and four of them end up coming with him, and they're the starters on the team. And it's just it was amazing as you watched them, and they're playing a team that was so much more athletic.
Missouri?
Oh,
yeah.
And Missouri's got – you know, a Duke transfer and, you know, the guy was from Tennessee Martin. He's a good player. They had all these kind of NIL Division
I Missouri showed transfers. Up like the typical SEC team. A lot of depth,
yes,
a lot of
yes.
talent, a lot of athleticism.
Right, right.
And then Drake said, we'll show you.
Yeah, just we're going to play basketball. It was an outstanding, fun game to watch just because of the, you know, styles make races, as they say in horse racing and boxing, and I think that the same thing applies sometimes in the NCAA. Let's get to the phone lines. Ken is on the Odyssey app. Good morning, Ken. How you doing?
Doing great, gentlemen. Thank you. I wanted to talk a little bit about the Purdue-McNeese matchup on Saturday. Mm-hmm. Purdue has had an atypical year this year because they started out well. They got really good in the first half of the conference season. They looked like they were going to be, you know, that they were going to compete for the Big Ten title. And then the wheels kind of fell off the wagon. It's like they forgot how to play the last 8 or 10 games of the season. And they came back yesterday, and they won a game yesterday that I think they would have typically lost in a lot of years, playing a team that nobody knows a lot about, who's, you know, got quick guards, get to the hole. They like to break to get off the, you know, to get the rebound and get out on the break. And Purdue didn't shoot well yesterday. And usually when they don't shoot well, they lose. But yesterday they found a way to win by killing High Point on the boards.
Dominated the paint.
Oh, they destroyed them. They out-rebounded them by about what? 150-0. It was ridiculous.
But Ken, you're worried about that happening Saturday?
It was 42-24.
Yeah.
So now on Saturday, I don't know that there's a great difference in style between McNeese and High Point. I mean, I don't know enough about the teams. I watched McNeese yesterday.
Yeah.
Beat Clemson, but McNeese I think came out ready to play. I think Clemson was tight. I think even their coach said at halftime that they played really tight in the first half. And I think at about the 30-minute mark, McNeese ran out of gas, and that's when Clemson made their run. I think Purdue's going to be okay as long as they defend like they did yesterday, because they did a really great job of keeping people out of the lane. And they can rebound. And if they shoot, if they even just regress to their mean shooting, I think they'll have more than enough to take care of McNeese tomorrow. So, I say this with trepidation as a Purdue fan who was an 18-year-old freshman in 1980 and who had to wait 44 years for the next time they got to the Final Four. You know, we typically celebrate Final Four weekend as Passover. So I say it with some bit of trepidation, but I do think Purdue's got enough for tomorrow's game against McNeese, and I think they'll be in the Sweet 16.
Thanks for the phone call. Yeah, I think there's some confidence that it's appropriate there because Purdue took care of High Point. They dominated, took advantage of their advantages like good teams do.
Yeah.
And they also, on Saturday, will have a senior guard in Braden Smith, who's an All-American, that you like to lean on in times like these. So I do think that they're in good hands. I'm surprised that Braden Smith, as we talked about yesterday, has transformed himself into an All-American from a guy that was, you know, the question mark in the backcourt as a freshman with Zach Edey, you know, in the middle.
Yep. Yep.
But this is a pretty good, well-coached team, and I think you see it'll be a really good matchup between two excellent coaches, but I think Purdue's depth in the end will probably be too much for McNeese State.
Where is High Point? Is that North Carolina?
I think it's North Carolina.
Carolina.
Yes, North Carolina.
Yeah, I knew it was in Carolina. I just didn't know where. Okay, let's get to Steve. He's on the north side. Hey, Steve.
Good morning, fellas. Two questions, local questions.
Mm-hmm.
How far can Illinois go? And DePaul accepted an invitation to that Vegas
the Fox tournament. College.
Just want to get y'all takes on that.
Well, I think that Illinois can think they are a Final Four team if they want. I mean, this is a wide open tournament, I believe, and they have a draw. The thing about Illinois, which is, I think, it's fun, but it's confounding. They could be a team that you could realistically see winning 2 or 3 games. And they could be a team that whose season ends tonight. it's that kind of unpredictability that defines college basketball anymore because of the way that programs bring in players and they turn over their roster year to year. This is an entirely different team than the Illinois team that entered last year's tournament. So applying their March experience to this team really is futile. You have the same coach. So, Mully, I think that you have an opportunity to use that and guard and beat Xavier and maybe upset Kentucky and do all those things and get to the Sweet 16 and maybe an Elite Eight appearance. But I have them winning tonight, and I have them losing to Kentucky.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I don't know that they're going to beat Kentucky. I have Illinois winning this game, and I felt uncertain about Illinois. I felt, we talked about this, I felt they were as difficult a team for me to figure out, just because what was the statistic? 7 different lineups since January when they started getting all the illness and all the injury, and you haven't seen sort of Illinois what they wanted to be and how, just haven't seen that steadily throughout the year. And so you think about last year and how they made that Sweet 16 run, and I just didn't know what to make of it. But they've got some really good talent. I wish they had done better in the tournament, in the Big Ten tournament. But I think they've got enough to beat Xavier. And I don't think that's easy. I'm not saying Xavier's a pushover. I'm just saying I think they can win this game. The Kentucky thing, I got to watch Kentucky play before I can make a judgment on that. Sometimes you see teams in the tournament, and you get a different feel for the team than you did when you watched them during the regular season. But Kentucky, obviously in a really great conference and had a lot of really competitive games.
As for DePaul, Chris Holtman's team will play in the inaugural college basketball crown postseason tournament, 16 teams, single elimination. Fox Sports hosted, it's in Vegas, and they will play April 1st. And if you're Chris Holtman, you want to continue to practice. You want to play as much as possible. I get why they're doing this. You have to mine the portal, but you also have to run a program. And this is an opportunity to do that, even with a losing record.
Yeah, they had a losing record on the year, but they got an invite to this tournament.
They won 11 more games than they did a year ago. So he's got things headed in the right direction, and this is part of all that.
312-644-6767. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
Yeah, whatever.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. That's our guy, Brad Biggs. You just heard his voice, and Biggsy has his first mock draft of the year out, and it's an interesting one. And with the number 10 selection in the NFL draft, he has the Bears selecting, drumroll please, Will Campbell, the left tackle from LSU. Interesting, his comment: if arm length weren't an issue, Campbell measures 32 5/8 inches at the scouting combine, he would be a top 5 pick. It's a fair concern, but plenty of very good left tackles have excelled without ideal arm length, which would be 34 inches or longer. The Bears can plug in Campbell at left tackle, and if it proves to be a problem down the road, he always could be an interior anchor.
Yeah, that'd be a great choice for the Bears if that happens. ChicagoTribune.com, you can find Brad Biggs' mock draft, his first one, 1.0. I find a lot of these choices definitely eye-opening because of the way you see such a variety of opinions on, let's say, Jackson Dart. I've seen him mocked in the top 5 by some people, which is a meteoric rise. He's 21st here in Biggs's mock draft. He's got Kelvin Banks, the tackle from Texas, who I think a lot of people thought could be top 10 to 15 material, going 31 to the Chiefs. He's got the first tackle off the board, not Will Campbell, but Armand Membu from Missouri, going just ahead of Campbell to the Saints. So there's a variety of opinions on a few specific need areas for the Bears, offensive tackle still being one. If they get Will Campbell at 10, they would be high-fiving. They'll probably be high-fiving anyway, but they'd be really high-fiving in that draft room, because this would be, to me, a home run of a pick.
I got the black forces on, so people see that they know it's time to go.
Yeah, it's time to go. The short arms are a concern. You can't dismiss anything when you're measuring everything.
Right.
But I do think that the intangibles and the tape tell you that Will Campbell is a serious football player that has had a lot of success despite those limitations.
I think it's interesting that he only has two. He has two quarterbacks. He has Cam Ward going first to Tennessee. And I think a lot of people there seems to be a belief now that Tennessee will take him at number one. There's just sort of this understanding that at some point you've got to make sure you get the quarterback and that now is the time to do it. And he has Shedeur Sanders going third. And you mentioned Dart. The interesting thing with this mock draft is a lot of people have Ashton Jeanty off the board by the time the Bears pick, but Bigsy has him going 12th.
It's another thing you haven't seen a lot of, the fact that Ashton Jeanty going that low. There's some draft nicks that are involved that believe that either the Raiders or even the Cowboys would be compelled to move up to get him. I don't know if that's going to happen, but the Raiders at 6, that'd be high for Ashton Jeanty, and even 10 might be a reach. But the thing we don't know, and I think Bigsy would acknowledge this, we'll look forward to talking to him next week about it, is that you just don't know how enamored Ben Johnson would be with this running back. And if he is head over heels in love with the idea of adding this running back, then they're going to take him at 10.
Yeah. It's very interesting. I you know what's interesting, too, is this idea that there are a lot of people that believe that Jackson Dart, not that he deserves to be a top 10 selection, but that the need for quarterback is so great that he could be a top 10
selection. It's supply and demand. That's what the draft is. And many a quarterback have been overdrafted in the top 10.
And you know what's wild is I saw someone mock him to New Orleans, and then I heard someone say, well, New Orleans, and I did not know this, they have not drafted a quarterback in the first round.
I know who. Archie Manning.
Is that unbelievable?
Archie Manning.
Can you believe
that? The last Ole Miss legend.
Can you believe?
Eli was in between. But
that's generations of quarterbacks.
Over 50 years ago.
I just find that
it's crazy.
Impossible. It's been that long since they took a quarterback in the first round.
I'd be surprised if they do that again. But it's a draft. You never know.
And Shedeur Sanders going to the Giants, doesn't that smack of kind of the idea of the Bears letting their beleaguered coach and general manager draft a quarterback before getting rid of them? I mean, both those guys are kind of in trouble in New York. Are you going to let them take a quarterback that high when they might not be there to coach him beyond a year?
That seems likely, especially if they make that pick.
Yeah. It's crazy, man. If they make that pick, that seems like
makes them easier
it will
to fire.
Secure that they won't be around. That's great stuff. All right, we've got Mike DeCourcy is going to join us next. We'll talk to our college basketball expert about everything that happened and that will happen today. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.